man, here we go again. Up early, feed the dog, out the door, traffic, at the office, boss in some kind of mood today, no time for lunch, annoying coworker, no time to relax, bedtime. Then we gotta do it all again? No way. Because the best way to break up the mundane every day is to play at Wild Rose Casino and Resort. Slots, tables, sports, and a whole lot of perks when you join and play with your club wild card. So, let's play Wild Rose Casino and Resort, Clinton.
Hi, I'm Jim Street, owner of Streets Maintenance. As a licensed, insured, and bonded master plumber, I specialize in all plumbing repairs, including but not limited to water heater and sump pumps to toilet and faucet repairs and replacements. For more information about my business, I'm online at streetsmaintenance.com and Facebook, or give me a call at 400-4483.
Hello there, and welcome to the Hawk Fanatic Mailbag Podcast. Thank you to our sponsors you heard at the front end of the podcast. It is Tuesday, March the 19th, 2024, a little before, actually a little after 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm getting a somewhat scheduled start to this. It varies, but it's usually around 9 o'clock on Tuesdays. And as I like to say, the hashtag is HFMail. Fire away anytime during the week between the podcasts, which is, again, Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. You can fire off questions anytime. The regulars have gotten accustomed to doing that, but wanted to share that with everyone else out there, along with a coffee sip to get us going. That was a big one because I didn't need a lot of coffee this morning. I may need some tonight because the Iowa men play an NIT game at Carver Hawkeye Arena with an 8 o'clock tip off. I was saying to another media member, Sunday, I think it was, before the brackets came out, I was like, I know we're getting an 8 o'clock game because, that's kind of what they do to the Midwestern teams. They give the, East Coast teams or Eastern time zone teams that 7 o'clock Eastern tip. And then they hit us with the 9 o'clock Eastern tip. But be that as it may, I am interested to see what type of crowd Carver Hawkeye Arena holds for the Iowa men against Kansas State. I mean, it's Big Ten versus Big 12. Kansas State made it to the Elite Eight last year. Obviously, a lot of roster turnover there since then, but had a decent season in the Big 12 this year, which many people consider the best conference in the country. Kansas State did not have an all-conference player on the top three teams, which would be 15 players. Had a few that were honorable mention, all Big 12, excuse me. They're pretty balanced. I think they have four players scoring in double figures. This was on Sunday night, I believe, and I don't think this has changed. I think this was through all the games that were played during the conference tournaments, and Iowa is ranked 62nd in the net rankings, and you can take these for what they're worth. And Kansas State was at 70. So very close. Iowa's 8-12 in quad one in two games, while the Wildcats are 9-13. So again, very comparable. Iowa was 10-10 in its conference. Kansas State was 8-10 in its conference. You're looking for common opponents here. I believe Kansas State lost to Iowa State at least twice, if not three times this year. Obviously, we know if you follow Iowa basketball, you know what happened when Iowa went to Ames this year in men's basketball. Not good. Nebraska won in Manhattan on December 17th, 62-46, and Iowa won its lone meeting with Nebraska this year, 94-76, on January 12th in Iowa City. Tyler Perry, not that one, averages 15.5 points per game, 15.5. Arthur Kaluma averages 14.7, and Cam Carter averages 14.6. Kaluma's 7.1 rebounds is the best on the team. They've got three guys averaging 14.6 points or more a game, so that's pretty balanced. So Iowa will have to be solid defensively, and that starts with obviously making some shots on the offensive end and not getting into scramble situations on defense, which we've talked about. You can get tickets for tonight's game. They're available now at 1-800-IA-HAWKS. That's 1-800-IA-HAWKS, or online at hawkeyesports.com/tickets. hawkeyesports.com/tickets. So if you're interested in going and you're hearing this before the game is tipped, go ahead over there. I think they are $20 for adults and $10 for students. To me, that's a little overpriced, but maybe that's with the NIT mandates that Iowa charges for those tickets, because I'm sure they get a slice of the gate as well. And the women's tournament games this weekend. Iowa plays Saturday against the winner of a play-in game, which I can't remember who the play-in game is. I apologize for that. Maybe I can bring it up here quickly. Let's see. Who is the play-in game for Iowa? It is Holy Cross and Tennessee Martin. And that game will be played on Thursday night here as a first four game. So Iowa gets to host the first four game, then two first round games, and then a second round game on Monday. And if you haven't heard, West Virginia and Princeton is in the other first round game. And those games will be played at, looks like, I think this is Central Time, but I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure the game is on at 2 o'clock on Saturday, the Iowa game, that is. Iowa's the first game, and then there'll be Princeton. And West Virginia will be the second game. But those tickets are sold out, and you could get in the nosebleeds if you consider the upper part of Carver Hawkeye a nosebleed. I think the tickets were about 300 a piece on the secondary market when I looked last night. The really good seats, you're looking at probably in the $2,500 to $3,000 price per ticket. To get into Saturday's game, and then Monday's probably going to be even more than that, obviously, because they'll be playing. It'll be Caitlin's last game in Carver Hawkeye Arena, no matter what happens, and it'll be for Iowa to go to the Sweet 16. So Monday's, if you can get a hang on those, handle on those, or get in on those at a reasonable price, I would do so now, because they're not going down; they're going to go up. And not many Iowa fans that sold out Carver are going to want to sell their tickets. So there's a limited supply of people that will do that, usually scalpers who have bought season tickets, and those people will sell for an exorbitant amount of money. So, spring football kicks off this week. We had Pro Day on Monday, March the 18th. Good performances there by the guys, who spoke about it as well. You can find that on my Twitter feed. I know Joe Evans had a really good day, from reports, and apparently worked out for some folks at fullback as well. And Joe is a really good athlete. I hope he gets an opportunity in the NFL. I'm sure he will be able to get into a camp and hopefully show what he can do and how he can contribute to a team. So look forward to seeing how that plays out. Cooper DeJean will have a pro day workout of his own on April 15th. He feels like by that date, he'll be healthy enough to be able to show what he can do. He's right now, from what I've seen just from mock drafts, and can take those for what they're worth, but he's projected to be like a mid-round, first-round pick. So he might be able to improve his stock with a pro day, and I'm sure that's what's on his mind. So that's it. Iowa baseball opens up the Big Ten season this week after sweeping Western Illinois at home this past weekend, 10-run ruling. And Iowa will head to West Lafayette to take on Purdue this weekend in its first Big Ten series of the season. So, as I like to do at the top of these podcasts, I like to catch up on what's going on in Hawkeye sports. I think I've done that to the best of my ability. And if there's anything else that you may wonder about, tickets, schedules, things like that, Check out HawkeyeSports.com. That's HawkeyeSports.com. That's the official website of the University of Iowa Athletics. Tons of usable, valuable information on that site, so check them out. All right, as I said earlier, many of the regulars are programmed to use the HFmail hashtag, #HFmail, to send me questions and comments during the week. And I think that is what 44MLS did on March the 12th, which was, this probably came in after I had completed last week's podcast, because it's on the date that I last recorded. But I go back to where I left off the previous week with questions. And this is the first one that popped up, and it's from 44MLess at 44MLess on the Twitter X machine. Hi, Rob. I was wondering what your thoughts are on the commitment of Addison Deal and the impact CC had on her decision. Also, it seems like recruiting has gone up another level over the last few years. Thanks. Yes, big pickup last week. We talked about this on the Hotspot podcast as well with Scott Docterman. You can catch that on Thursday mornings, 9 a.m. We've streamed that live on the Hawk Fanatic YouTube account. And yes, a tremendous pickup. By all accounts, a top 20-ish type player in the 2025 class. So she still has another year of high school left before she gets to Iowa City and won't sign a national letter of intent until November, but she is a four-star, five-star, depending on which stars you look at, who the rankings you look at, from Southern California, 6 foot, very dynamic guard. I encourage people to check out her video. You'll see kind of the influence of Caitlin Clark, which you see a lot in college basketball. I think it's Caitlin Clark, and it's just kind of it's been where the game is headed anyway. Steph Curry obviously had a big impact on, you know, things like step back threes and no look passes. And not that those are anything new to the game, but just kind of how they're implemented these days. So you could see those parts of her game. I have not had a chance to talk to her yet. I'm trying to get her on a podcast that hopefully we'll have on this feed, which reminds me to promote the podcast I did this past Saturday with Aaliyah Guyton, a 2024 guard from Peoria, Illinois, who will be coming here in the 2024 class. She'll be here next season, and she's a very highly ranked guard in the 2024 class. Check out that podcast on this feed. That is Aaliyah Guyton trying to do the same with Addison Deal. So I don't have any firsthand information for you, Les, only what I've read. And that's basically, she is inspired by Caitlin, but that wasn't her main motivation for choosing Iowa. She likes the style of play. She feels like she can fit here. She likes the coaches, the other players on the team. She's not going to be playing with Caitlin. So that's also, you know, previous classes, those kids had a chance to play with her. These classes 24 and beyond will not. They will be trying to uphold the legacy that she's put down here in her 4 years, where she's gotten this program, and we'll see where this team goes this year. But I think in general terms, in macro terms, Caitlin Clark's impact on the game, whether it be the game as a whole, nationally, worldwide, collegiately, and then micro Iowa, she's impacting, obviously, everything that happens with Iowa women's basketball, and that is stretching to recruiting, which you would expect. And I think her raising the profile of the sport and the Iowa program opens up recruiting doors that maybe otherwise would not have been open. So I think the impact is there. I said this on the Hotspot podcast last week, but I would caution people not to go too overboard on the Caitlin Clark comparisons to kids that are coming into the program. I don't think that's fair to them. I know, and there's no harm in saying, wow, there's parts of her game that looks like Caitlin, but expecting her to be the next Caitlin Clark or anybody else that comes in after Caitlin Clark, I think is an unreasonable bar to set. Hopefully they reach that bar. But let's let them be who they are, and hopefully they can come together as a team moving forward to keep this program playing on a high level to the point where it is a national title contender every year. That's the goal. It's not the goal to get the next Caitlin Clark in the program. The goal, and I'm not saying you're saying that, Wes. I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but that's kind of what the goal is here moving forward, is to recruit the players that can work together and come together to keep the program at a high level. And hopefully Addison Deal is a big part of that, but excellent addition to the program. Trent Manfro, this is from March the 14th, so about 5 days ago. How should the Big Ten Network, you know, Trip, you like firing these TV questions at me. And this is not something I spend a lot of time on. I have an appreciation for people that are very curious about the TV and what can be better about the TV. A lot of times I'm at the game, so I'm not watching it on TV. And then as far as TV goes and my TV viewing, I pretty much look on the listings on my app on my phone, or look on the TV and say, oh, that's on, I'll watch that. I know when the Iowa games are on and where they're on, but sometimes I even have to look at Hawkeye Sports or my notes to remember what TV stations Iowa's on. But anyway, so I'll do my best to answer your TV questions, Trip. Just know that this is not my area of not only expertise, but much knowledge. So there's that caveat. How should the Big Ten Network fix their less than stellar day one, two viewing setup for men's wrestling conference tournament? It was terrible. They couldn't even bother to show updated team scores, put it on Peacock with some ch sub channels for each school. Yeah, I'd be all for that. It isn't a great viewing experience for the Big Ten wrestling tournament, and you should do everything you can to highlight that. And I don't think the Big Ten Network does a particularly good job of that. I think it does better as the tournament goes on. Obviously, the finals they do a really nice job with, but yeah, I think that's a benefit to like the Big 12 tournament. As far as I know, they can put it on ESPN Plus and show different mats, and you know, you can see everything. I don't think the Big Ten Network does that, and people miss a lot of wrestling, a lot of good wrestling. I think ESPN, at least for the national tournament, does a really good job of making sure you can watch just about every match that's contested. So yeah, I would send your suggestions to the Big Ten office, Trip, and say, hey, here are my recommendations for a better broadcast for the Big Ten men's wrestling tournament. And why not put everything on Peacock if you can't handle it on the Big Ten Network? A couple more from 44 MLS, and these are from Sunday. Hey, Rob, as a fan, I appreciate what the men's team accomplished over the last several years of making the NCAA tournament. However, based on ISU winning the Big 12 tourney and getting a two seed for this year's tourney, has the gap gotten wider between Iowa and Iowa State? It's a good question. Coffee. I need a coffee sip for that question. I don't know. I mean, at first blush, I would say yes, because of where Iowa State is now in comparison to Iowa. But it's one season. You know, and TJ Otzelberger's done a really good job there, and he's got a system and a program in place that seems like it can sustain. But if you look at, I think, was it close to 300 players went into the portal Monday, the first day the portal was open, and it's open for like a month. I'll be interested to see, not only with Iowa and Iowa State, and I don't want to get too far away from your question, but how teams go about rebuilding. We've had NIL now for a year or two. Teams have used it a little bit, but I can see some of the big power brokers in the sport going all in and paying a lot of money to build a power team and power teams around the country. And that can be Duke, North Carolina, you know, the big teams. And that's going to trickle down. it's always a race to figure out how to maximize the system. And I think this offseason, we're going to see the next step in that pursuit, so to speak. So, can Iowa compete on that landscape? And I wrote about this over the weekend, or what, maybe it was, it may have been after Iowa lost on Thursday. It's been a while. It was a long weekend, a lot of stuff going on, but I wrote about Iowa basketball needing more of a commitment from the athletic department and the fan base through NIL. And I know that rubs people the wrong way, but that's the landscape now. If you want to compete on the highest level, you increase your chances of doing so by committing resources to the program because it's a different landscape now, especially for Iowa. If you look at Iowa State's roster, how many of those kids are from Iowa? It's not a great state for producing high-level Division I basketball players. There's good high school basketball in this state. It's not to the point where it can sustain. There are more players from Wisconsin on Wisconsin's roster because they produce more high-level players. They also did very well in the portal last year. Iowa brought in Ben Crickey. It was a very nice addition. Philip Robracha came here before NIL. That was a nice addition. Iowa needs to be better in the transfer portal if it wants to compete. You see what it's committed to in football. Last year, it committed to Cade McNamara, Eric Hall, and that group bringing in through the portal. This year, it invested a ton of money, a lot of money, maybe a ton's overstating. A significant amount of money in keeping the super seniors from going from leaving the program. Jay Higgins, Quinn Schulte, Sebastian Castro, down the list. Those guys got paid to stay. So if Tony Perkins shows up and is like, "Hey, Fran, I'm getting, Purdue and Indiana are offering me 250, 200K, 150. What can you do?" Is Iowa going to match that? Or is he going to walk? And don't say Tony's, a traitor for doing that. That's the system now. And if you don't want to play by those rules, if you don't want to invest in your program, it's going to make it that much harder to win. I think Iowa State is more committed to helping its basketball program than Iowa. And that's part of what has to change. Has the gap widened? I'm not sure. I need a larger sample size less, but I'm afraid that it might. 44 MLS again. Thoughts on teams not participating in the NIT tournament? The NIT has a rich history, and for those teams not participating, and disappointing to say the least. Do you think this is a player and or coach driven? And do you think the transfer portal has a role in this? Definitely the transfer portal has a role in this because the teams that have tapped out have said so. They want to get into the portal and start recruiting. I think it's lame. I think it's university motivated. They don't have to spend money on the program, traveling, road games, because the schools have to pay for that travel and things. So it's a commitment, and that's why it was nice to see Iowa commit to this and put some resources into this program to at least participate in the NIT. Now, NIT takes care of expenses and certain things like that, but the university is still committed, and it's a cop out saying you're getting into it for recruiting purposes. You may very well hit the ground running in recruiting once the transfer portal opens, but that doesn't mean you can't also coach your team and play in a tournament. It happens all year round. What the heck makes it different for the NIT? As far as the rich history of the NIT, I think as time goes by, the NIT has more of a stigma of being the nobody's interested tournament, not important tournament, however you want to transform that acronym. But it is still, if you look at the teams that make the NCAA tournament, which is 68, and then you add in the 32 that made the NIT, that is remedial math skills here. That's 100 of 350 Division I teams that play in those two tournaments. If you go to bowl games, there are 80 plus of the 130 FBS programs that play in bowl games. So it is much more prestigious to play in the NIT for a college basketball team than it is for a college football team to play in the Music City Bowl, the Blockbuster Bowl. Is Blockbuster still a thing? I guess it's not. The Pool and Weed Eater Bowl. I'm giving people free advertisement here. But you get what I'm saying. It is an accomplishment to make the NIT. Again, it's not. It's nowhere near the from a percentage standpoint of what a bowl game means. So it's much more it's much more of a comp an accomplishment, so to speak. So that's my thoughts on that. I think the players would want to play less. I'm talking to less, not play less, like fewer games. I think the players want to play, and this is more university driven. That's my instinct on this one, and I could be off, but yeah, that's kind of my instinct on that one. But it is what it is. I don't like using that term a lot, but there's really nothing. There's no recourse for the players. They have to do what the university doesn't want to play in the NIT. They're done, and that's kind of a bummer for them. Want to let folks know that support for this podcast comes from Systems Unlimited, celebrating 50 years of providing services to people living with disabilities and mental health needs throughout East Central Iowa. A list of their services and upcoming events can be found at sui.org. That is sui.org. Thank you to Systems Unlimited for the great work they've been doing in our community for over half a century, and we certainly appreciate their support of the podcast. We're going to hear from a few more supporters right now, and I will be back on the other side with more of your questions. Hang in there.
Hi, this is AJ Perez, managing partner at Deary Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Waukee and Iowa City. I'm so proud of our team at both locations. We are committed to one thing, giving our customers the absolute best when it comes to service and a car buying experience, the kind of experience that brings you back. What makes us different? We believe at Deary, we don't just sell cars, we help people buy them.
Do you need a great electrical contractor or fire and water restoration specialist? Well, contact Lance Bolin at LB Electric and LJ Construction in North Liberty. Lance has served the corridor for many years and is ready to help you. Call Lance Bolin at 319-640-1116. That's 319-640-1116. Or visit LJ_construction on Instagram for licensed and insured electrical work, fire and water restoration, and remodeling.
And we are back, and I want to let you folks know that switching is easy. We do it all the time. We switch on the lights. We switch TV channels. Some of us switch partners while square dancing. That's not me. Well, that's a stretch. But what's not a stretch is how you can switch and save with State Farm. In fact, State Farm agent Chad Birch, right here in Iowa City, can switch you over so you can start saving today. Chad and his team are ready to welcome you to the State Farm neighborhood. With Chad Birch, it's easy to switch and save. Just give him a call. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Thank you to Chad Birch. Thank you to Systems Unlimited. Thank you for all of our supporters here. It helps us bring you these podcasts free of charge. No Patreon, any of that stuff. So appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you guys sending in questions, as did Jesse Lucier at Jesse_Lucier_ on Twitter. And this is also from Sunday. Thoughts on the way Iowa sold season tickets this year. Do you think it was a mistake selling out the arena instead of leaving a lot of tickets for single games, giving more people opportunities to watch? I wasn't a fan of limiting it to 15,000 fans for such a low price. Yeah, I've heard this question asked by others, Jesse, and I think it's fair. I think, and I hesitate to use the word unprecedented, but it is. Iowa's never sold out the arena before for women's basketball. So in doing that, there wasn't really a blueprint on how to go about it. I think there was some surprise with how quickly they sold out with the price they had, and they messed up. They could have sold those tickets for more and received more revenue, but at least for the faithful, longtime Iowa women's basketball fans, I think it would have been wrong to just like double the price of the tickets for people that have been there forever. Do you give those people cheaper tickets and the new season ticket holders a higher price ticket? Is that fair? I don't know. Marketing is not my background, but you're right. From my perspective, you sell the tickets when you can sell them rather than hold them back. Maybe the price was too low, but everybody had a chance, right, to buy season tickets. The people that took advantage of it and went in and committed to it right away benefited. Even people that maybe couldn't make it to all the games, they could have, you know, sold their tickets on the secondary market for the games they couldn't get to and paid for the tickets they bought probably pretty easily. So I get it. I understand it. It certainly impacted the NCAA tournament tickets. But that's just the structure of this thing right now. And as someone who covered Iowa women's basketball all the way back to 1997 and remember those crowds and through the years when the curtains were dropped in Carver-Hawkeye Arena, you sell the tickets when you can. And this is a important moment in time for the game itself, women's basketball. And Iowa has a big role in that. And the environment that's it's been in Carver this year has just been incredible. It's as good as that arena's been in my, whatever, count up how, what, 27, 28 years I've been here. And it's an incredible environment. So I think they could have tweaked some things, Jesse. But I'm of the belief that you sell those tickets when you can sell them. Maybe the price was a little too low. But it's a fair question, and I know a lot of people have been disappointed that they haven't been able to get into the arena this year, whether it's, you know, timing or just financially. Like I said, it's to just get a seat, one seat into Saturday's game against a team in Holy Cross or Tennessee Martin that Iowa should beat by roughly 50 points is going to cost you $300 just to get in. That's not parking. That's not concessions. That's none of that. That's a lot of money for people. And I get it, but this is a very unique time. I would encourage people that like the sport and want to continue to support the sport to buy tickets next season when Caitlin Clark is no longer here. That would be supportive. And hopefully Iowa doesn't jack the prices up next year and hurt itself when Caitlin is gone, trying to ride the momentum it has right now. The way to ride, to keep that momentum going, is to continue to market and encourage people and say, yes, Caitlin's gone, but start to promote Hannah and Sid and the other kids that are coming back, and make sure you maximize where you are right now with this program. Hopefully Beth Getz has that and her marketing people have that in their mind. And this sport continues to be very well received around here. I think it will, at least initially in the next couple of years, but it takes work to keep that going. There's no doubt about it, because this isn't football, and football is the sport in Iowa. At Iowa, in Iowa City, you put a football game in Kinnick Stadium, people are going to show up. That doesn't happen in the other sports. Well, maybe wrestling. So important time to maximize the popularity that they've achieved the last few years. Tripp is back. This one's from yesterday, March 18th. Coffee Sip is his A. He's got an A and a B, and the first one is Coffee Sip, so I'm going to oblige and take a sip of my coffee. That one was for you, Tripp. Is the women's basketball team going to sign a true five center this spring or in the portal? Well, they have one coming in, and her name is Ava Hayden, and she's from Oregon, and she's already signed. Is she a true five center? I think that term is less descriptive than it used to be. I think there's more ways to fill that position beyond having a Monica Sinano or Camille Cardoza for South Carolina, or Angel Reese is a five, but it's an athletic five that can run the floor, that can defend, that can do that. To me, is what I would want if I'm Iowa. No offense to Monica Sinano or Megan Gustafson, who were incredible offensive players, but I want a really solid two-way five that can defend the rim and also step out, in addition to be able to score at the rim. I think Ava Hyden can be that. She's got some room to grow still, both physically and as a player. And I think she has an opportunity to be the next really good one at Iowa. And I wouldn't sleep. I know fans have been frustrated at times, and some of her teammates, one in particular, have been frustrated with O'Grady's play this year. But she's started to make strides in the Big Ten tournament. If she can build on that, there's something there. She's got skill. She was a pretty good, you know, a pretty highly regarded recruit when she came in here. I wouldn't just dismiss her yet. Maybe it took her a little longer to figure it out than it did for Megan and Monica and other big players that Jan Jensen has tutored. But I think she has a chance, and I think Ava Hyden is a player that can help you in that spot next season as well, and then grow from there. Jesse Lussier is back. What are you looking forward to the most in spring practice and the game? And is it the new punter? I'm always interested in the punter. I don't know how much we'll see at practice and or in the spring practice, open practice at Kinnick Stadium, how much punting they're going to show us. But I certainly will have my eyes on him. But the backup quarterbacks, I think, you know, it's accepted that Cade is the guy if he's healthy going into the fall. But that backup quarterback position is going to be important, not only because we saw a drop off last year when Cade got hurt. We can't have that again. And number two, Cade is injury prone, has been injury prone. Hopefully he's healthy, can play all 12 regular season games and whatever postseason games Iowa has. Hopefully McNamara can handle that load. But we can't, you know, I wouldn't say that that's something you can count on, and you have to have a contingency plan. Iowa did not have one last year. They let players walk, and they brought in other guys, and those guys were not ready. So that can't happen again. Hopefully Iowa's learned its lesson there. To me, that is the most important position. Cade McNamara's health and what is behind him. Because if the quarterback play is bad again this year, Iowa's not going to do any better than it did last year, because the schedule's more difficult. So, and Iowa did lose players. You know, it's not like guys aren't going into the NFL draft. We talked early in the podcast about Pro Day. They're replacing players. So you do have a lot coming back with that super senior class, but that's not on offense. That's the thing we're looking at here, right, guys, is the quarterback position and the offense. How do the receivers look? How's the offensive line look? I think we feel pretty good about the running backs and the tight ends. Offensive line, quarterback, receivers. That's what I'm looking at. I think that's it. I can tell here, unless somebody got in late. Go back to my tweet here to make sure there's nothing underneath them. Nope, there is not. So we're good to go, and I appreciate it. Kind of a tight podcast today, but that's the way we like them. Thank you, everybody, for sending in questions. Enjoy the NIT game tonight. If you're listening to this before it tips off, should be a I think Iowa, I saw, was a 5.5 point favorite against Kansas State. So, you know, Iowa's expected to win and move on. And they would play the winner of Utah, and I can't remember what the other team is, but it's at Utah. Should Iowa and Utah, the favorites, win, Iowa would have a trip to Salt Lake City for the second round of the NIT. So I was out there back in the early 2000s when the women played out there. it's a beautiful city and a really nice arena too. So I would encourage folks to go out and check that out if they're big men's basketball fans. But that's a podcast for a different day, and that's this podcast is over. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you so much to our sponsors. We'll talk to you Thursday on the Hotspot Podcast, 9 a.m. YouTube Hawk Fanatic channel. Check us out then. Until then, peace.